Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we're taking some time out in the day, or it might be evening where you are, to have a little bit of inspiration and talk about some current events. And finally, the meat of the show is to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is September 23rd, 2010. You are listening to show number 99. Thank you so much for joining me. Don't forget to click listen, friend, favorite, or comment when you go onto the Blog Talk Radio Who's Reading the Organon website. You can listen to the old shows or download them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod. And now we're on to the inspiration for the day. Kartik Raghavamurthy from Facebook quotes Thomas Edison, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame, in diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease." And I'm wondering whether that will be preventative care. I'm wondering whether Thomas Edison was just simply way ahead of his time. Another quote from Sydney, this is a quote by Sydney Hook, a person who was born in 1902, says, "Everyone who remembers his own education remembers teachers, not methods and techniques. The teacher is the heart of the educational system." And today isn't even Teacher's Day, but we're giving a shout out to all teachers. And then this one came along in Twitter. It's tweeted by someone named Sesame Street, and I wonder if it is the actual, I'll have to check it out if it's the actual show. And Big Bird says, "Even though Snuffy's a snuffleupagus and I'm a bird, we are best friends. Friends don't always have to be the same." And that is true. We are all different. And finally, John Ruskin's is quoted here, "People are eternally divided into two classes, the believer, builder, and praiser, and the unbeliever, destroyer, and critic." That was quote tweeted by JCase59. I had a little puzzle to tell you, but I thought, well, we have so much news going on that I'm going to skip the puzzle today and go right over into the story about mastitis and what that means for homeopaths around the world. There's a story about mastitis and homeopathy, that homeopathic and antibiotic treatment of mastitis produce similar results, and how that is going to happen for changing the environment of medicine today once it's recognized that homeopathy is truly effective. A recent clinical control trial conducted by researchers at the Department of Animal Nutrition and Animal Health of the University of Kassel in Germany studied the effectiveness of the classical homeopathic treatment strategy in cases of mild and moderate bovine clinical mastitis in comparison with antibiotic and placebo treatments. The trial was financially supported by the Federal Ministry of Food, Agriculture, and Consumer Protection. to reduce the use of antibiotics in organic livestock production, European Union regulations stipulate that homeopathic and herbal medicines shall be used, I want to emphasize this, in preference, provided that their therapeutic effect is effective for the species of animal and the condition for which the treatment is intended. The use of chemically synthesized allopathic medicinal products may only be used under strict conditions when the use of homeopathic and herbal medicines is inappropriate. Studies from research groups in the United Kingdom and Germany show that 34 to 51% of clinical mastitis cases in dairy cows were treated with homeopathic medicines, although only a few papers have been published so far on using homeopathy as a treatment strategy in mastitis therapy. That's a really high percentage, don't you think? In the recent trial, a total of 136 lactating dairy cows with 147 affected quarters from the four herds in Germany were randomly allocated to three treatment groups. The cows were examined on days 0, 1, 2, and on days 7, 14, and 28. That's about a week and 2 weeks later. And also on 56, post-initial infection to assess the clinical signs. Simultaneously, with the exception of days 1 and 2, quarter milk samples for the laboratory examinations that include bacteriology, somatocell count, were collected to assess bacteriological and cytological cure rates. On days 28 and 56, treatment strategies did not differ significantly with respect to the clinical outcomes, and the total cure rate in cases of bacteriological negative mastitis in cases of n equals 56. In cases of pathogen positive mastitis, n equals 91. The cure rate after 4 to 8 weeks was similar between the two treatment strategies, homeopathy and antibiotic treatment. But the difference between the homeopathic and placebo treatment at day 56 was significant. So we see here that we could use homeopathy, which does not carry any kinds of side effects or weakened immune system, and hopefully would be preventative in terms of future mastitis repercussions or inflammation for the cows. So we're looking to our animals to help us in our endeavor to create awareness about homeopathy. I'm also going to mention that I read on the New York Times, or this was in healthland.time.com, that if you watch TV or use a cell phone, you're getting radiation. If you smoke cigarettes, you're definitely getting radiation. So they have a list of six different places in your environment that you may be getting some radiation, and we know that that contributes to cancer. And we do have an epidemic of cancer in our societies today. So if you smoke cigarettes, you're definitely getting it. While not all types and sources of radiation are the same, the scientists agree that their net effect is to increase your risk of cancer and other health problems. And there are other types of radiation where the evidence is clear or unclear, like ionizing radiation, the type that comes from x-rays and nuclear reactions. That's definitely clear, and it also shows birth defects. But health data on other kinds of energy, such as radio frequency waves from cell phones, Wi-Fi, and microwave ovens, that's called non-ionizing radiation, has conflicting reports. Some believe that it is dangerous, and other people say that you're getting it, these ions in the air every day, and it's not going to make a big effect. It's your position in your healthcare. You take precautions where you feel like you need to. I could go ahead and read further about that. There are carcinogens like arsenic, benzene, hydrogen cyanide are reasons to quit smoking, as are the links to heart disease and stroke. And in this particular article, I'll give you the link for it, they itemize the number of micro REMS that you're going to receive, and you could total those up to see what, how many is going to be effective in your life. Even taking a airplane flight, a round trip, coast to coast flight, which is about 4,890 miles in total, your body absorbs 6 of these MREMs of radiation. And then it says then you add to that 10 MREMs when you get through, when you go through the airport security screening, and it all adds up. It all adds up. And even watching television, you're getting a very small amount of radiation from the electrical conductivity within the appliance. And there's one very unusual point of fact, that if you are living in Denver, you're going to add 50 MREMs to your yearly background load compared to 24 in sea level inhabitants, people who are living in New York City. The reason is that there's more radiation in the Mile High City because it literally is 1 mile above sea level and the thinner air that accompanies high altitude. The sun has an easier time pushing through thin mountain air, exposing what's called Denverites, the people who live in Denver, to higher levels of non-ionizing source UV rays. Okay. I want to remind you again to upload your cured cases to the website to be in the running for the computer program. And there's been a lot of talk about dengue fever and homeopathy posted by Dr. Pavat Kumar. He has posted, in addition to Rajneesh's major article there, Dr. Pavat has said that due to heavy rains in northern India, there are certain medicines, homeopathic medicines, that are providing some excellent results for dengue fever. That in, those include bryonia, gelsimium, rustox, arsenicum album, eupatorium, and pulsatilla. Those all sound like remedies that are good for influenza as well. And we have a guest. Marilyn has called in again, and I did want to talk a little bit about angina pectoris, which is in the old journals, the articles from old journals group. Take a look at that. It's a really excellent article. You will thoroughly reap benefits for the throes and pains of the heart with descriptions of aconite, actia, aurum, cactus, gelsimium, ignatia, kalmia, lachesis, lilium tiger, nausea, spigelia, and tabacum. That's 9 plant remedies, 1 metal, and 2 snakes, all that are helpful for angina pectoris. I hear that Marilyn is on the line. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Debbie.
You can hear me, huh?
Yeah.
It always sounds kind of soft when you first get on. I also wanted to tell folks to take a look at the Agriculture and Plant Group because they're gearing up with so many lively discussions. Bretta O'Connor provided a wonderful treatment to remove fire ants by using Formica rufa, and there's also a blog using Formica rufa for gout, but to use it as an insecticide is a really great idea. Mark Moody, who's an agro-homeopath, he gives suggestions for tamping down your weeds in the garden. So you can check out weed control in that Agriculture and Plant Group. And one more story on the network is by Dr. Safaris, who wrote a story about getting the fishbone that was stuck in your throat and how to remove it without an operation. This is going to be a puzzler. If you haven't read the story, guess what the remedy is to get that fishbone out of your throat when you've swallowed it. All right. We're ready to go ahead and read our aphorism number 81. It's got a very long footnote. Marilyn, have you got the reading for this aphorism in front of you?
I do.
Okay. I would love it if you would go ahead and read.
Okay. Before I do that, Debbie, I just wanted to tell you I spent part of the morning researching Hyos in books. Yeah, because of the discussion that Sarang posted on Hyos. and all the comments. It's pretty interesting. So there's a lot of really great stuff on the site. A lot of really interesting
We can learn a lot from each other. Go ahead.
My goodness. Okay, so aphorism 81. The fact that this extremely ancient infecting agent has gradually passed in some hundreds of generations through many millions of human organisms and has thus attained an incredible development renders it in some measure conceivable how it can now display such innumerable morbid forms in the great family of mankind, particularly when we consider what a number of circumstances contribute to the production of these great varieties of chronic diseases, such as the secondary symptoms of SORA. Besides the indescribable diversity of men in respect of their congenital corporeal constitutions, so that it is no wonder if such a variety of injurious agencies acting from within and from without, and sometimes continually, on such a variety of organisms permeated with the thoric miasm should produce an innumerable variety of defects, injuries, derangements, and sufferings, which have hitherto been treated of in the old pathological works under a number of special names as diseases of an independent character.
Okay. Should we talk about that before going on to the footnotes?
I think so. It's almost like one long sentence here.
He does that all the time.
Yeah. So what is he saying?
You have to take a deep breath and then get into it. And basically, he's saying that this is not new. It's an ancient infecting agent. And, you know, I think very much about mutations, about viruses, about these millions of organisms that have an incredible capacity to adjust to their environment, to move with their environment. And I'm thinking here Hahnemann is saying that the environment is what's shaping the how this infecting agent expresses itself and adapts to life on Earth, and how does the human organism also adapt to these millions of infecting agents. And thus, we are individuals. We are in different climates, in different parts of the world. We're surrounded by different plants, and all sorts of different impacts upon our being and even what kind of family we're living in. So how do we adapt, and how do these infecting agents within us adapt and produce the variety of chronic diseases to make adjustments in how we survive? It's our survival mode. And that's what I think that it's amazing. And he's quite amazed. It's at the ability of the variety of ways that it can express and produce disease. How do you take on it? What's your take on it?
No, it's exactly the same. I feel that's what I'm getting out of it. And then the last part, of course, is that, you know, what he's saying is that all of these different names, all these different diseases are one and the same, right? It's SORA. And yet they've got all these different labels, and it would seem as though they're all different diseases, but in fact they're all the same. It's all SORA.
It's all SORA, which goes back to aphorism number 80, which we had read previously, saying that SORA is the fundamental cause. It's like the numerous thousands of ways that it expresses itself, that there is the fundamental core and then everything else comes off of there. But for us, in order to break it down, I guess doctors, in order to make sense of it and to break it down, wanted to give it a label, to identify it so that people would have common terms. And sometimes it's useful to say, oh, yes, he has gastritis, or he has a headache or a migraine, and this person has Crohn's disease, or, you know, whatever it is, you're giving it a label so that supposedly people can identify the symptoms that occur within grouping of symptoms that occur within the population who have that. And it's kind of like a language unto itself to give it a name. Like, we give ourselves a name. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yesterday when I made that comment that, you know, Sora is, you know, without Sora, you don't get anything else, because all the other diseases build on Sora. Gary Weaver commented on the chat that you don't have to have the venereal, you know, venereal diseases don't necessarily come because you have Sora, and that's in Hahnemann's chronic diseases. So, of course, I went and picked up the book, but, I had the flu yesterday, so I didn't do any reading. I just lay in bed. And I thought that's something that, you know, I really have to learn about, because...
You need to investigate.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you have to find out the answer to that.
That question. It's an interesting thing to know. Fundamental.
Right.
Right? That's fundamental. Why don't we know that? You know how...
Why don't we know that?
How come I didn't
whether,
know that?
Whether... Okay.
Whether
well,
without... Is Sora the beginning? And then all else builds? Or is there Sora, psychosis, and syphilis, right? In the Maya.
Uh-huh.
One necessarily doesn't have to build on the from the other.
Okay. So let's put that out as... thought, food for thought for the listeners, and let us know how you feel about this, where it's written and documented, and how we can get a better understanding of whether a person maybe doesn't have to express the Sora, but can go into another aspect of the miasms. And okay, so is there anything else, or should we go ahead and read the footnote?
Yeah, let's go to the footnote.
Okay. You know, he has here, he says, the great family of mankind, which reminds me so much, wasn't there a book back in the 60s about the family of man? I don't know how many people can recall that. It was a photographic book about pictures of humans in all different parts of the world, and showing how we are one and the same. We are all human, and yet we have our little differences from the color of our skin, our language. We have little differences, but really we're all basically human, and we all have human needs, desires, wants to keep us alive. Okay, we're going to go ahead into the footnote. Did you want to read that also?
First, I have to find it, Debbie. Oh, okay. So it's the footnote 81. Okay, and it says 78 in red in front of it, right?
Right.
Some of these causes that exercise a modifying influence on the transformation of Sora into chronic diseases manifestly depend sometimes on the climate and the peculiar physical character of the place of abode, sometimes on the very great varieties in the physical and mental training of youth, both of which may have been neglected, delayed, or carried to excess, or on their abuse in the business or conditions of life, in the matter of diet and regimen, passions, manners, habits, and customs of various kinds.
Good. That is the first footnote. That comes off of the part where he says It renders it in some measure conceivable how it can now display such innumerable morbid forms in the great family of mankind, particularly when we consider what a number of circumstances. So here he's enumerating what he meant by circumstances. And does this bring to mind Darwin to you? You know how a giraffe must be out in the plains and be able to reach the trees in order to get its food, and the kiwi and all the different birds, how they adapt and based on where they're living, their environment. So here we have kind of, and then he talks a little bit about education. How are you brought up, and what is your culture, and what is your family, and what are you taught? It's sort of nurture and nature that helps to develop the individual, but also helps to develop the disease. What do you think?
It brings to mind, I rescued a Siamese cat. He was supposed to be euthanized like 2 days after I rescued him. And he would take the food out of his bowl with his, like, by mouth, and then start to play with it. And, you know, every single time he had food, he'd do the same thing. We're looking at him and thinking it's very strange that he would do such a thing. But that was because he must have been a stray, and he was catching the food, and he was playing with it as though he was catching it. So it's very interesting. This is what it reminds me. How do animals adapt? How does behavior become what it is? And that's why.
And continue.
And continue
the behavior based on what life has handed you, what
exactly.
Your heredity is, what your environment is, what your upbringing is. All of those factors come into play into how you will be in the world, and what about the diseases, how you deal with the hand that you're played in the world based on, I guess, Sora is what he's saying. Is he not saying that?
I think so.
We have about 2 minutes left, and in 2 minutes, I don't know that we can read the last footnote. It's rather long. So let's just read the footnote one more time. I'll do that, and people can pause and consider what he's saying. Some of the causes that exercise a modifying influence on the transformation of Sora, so it's talking about the transformation of this disease element, into chronic diseases, manifestly depend sometimes on the climate and on the peculiar physical character of the place of abode, sometimes on the very great varieties in the physical and mental training of youth, both of which may have been neglected, delayed, or carried to excess, or on their abuse in the business or condition of life. In the matter of diet and regimen, passions, manners, habits, and customs of various kinds. Well, we have many, many influences in our lives, and I'm going to leave you with that until next time. And thank you very much, Marilyn, for calling in and talking with me today. Everybody, take your book off the shelf and read it.
Thanks, Debbie.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.